My guest today, Ed Olu, wrote a children's book called Around the World in 8 Dives, Scuba Diving All 7 Continents. The book is described on Amazon as follows. Around the World in 8 Dives is not just a thrilling tale of exploration, but also a story of resilience, determination, and the power of the human spirit. We are getting all that and more today from my guest, Ed Olu. It is time to get our scuba gear ready as we dive all 7 continents with Ed. Welcome to Journey with Jake. This is a podcast about adventure and how through our adventures we can overcome the challenges of life that come our way. While I expect you will learn some things about different adventures, this show will entertain you. Each episode will feature a different guest or guests as they share experiences and stories from the different adventures they have been on. Not only will you be entertained, but you will also hear the failures and trials each guest faces and what they have done or are doing to overcome the hardships that come their way. My goal is to take each of us on a journey through the experiences of my guests with the hope that you'll be entertained and inspired to overcome your day-to-day challenges. After all, it's not all about the destination as it is about the journey. Welcome back to Journey with Jake. My name is Jake Bushman, and I am your host for another adventure as we explore all 7 continents with scuba diver Ed Olu. Before we get to my conversation with Ed, a couple of things I want to share. First, I apologize for how I sound on this episode. I was getting over a cold a few weeks ago when this was recorded, so my voice wasn't very pleasant to listen to, so I apologize for that. Next, this is episode 97, which means we are just 3 episodes from episode 100. Episode 100 will consist of some updates on some past guests, as well as the return of Rick Bamford as the guest host of Journey with Jake. My journey to 100 and beyond has been amazing, and I invite each of you to join me by following along on Instagram at Journey with Jake Podcast. Speaking of amazing, Ed Olu and what he has accomplished, amazing. Let's get to my conversation with Ed Olu. Well, I am excited today because I have someone who I've looked at for a while now, and I finally get the chance to speak with him on the podcast. Edward Olu. Did I say Olu right? Is that how you say it?
Pretty close. Edward Olu.
Edward Olu.
You know, yeah. It's typically the first in ways it means God. It's a Yoruba name, God, deity, Lord. In most sense, it's Olu something. My name is Olu Dari. His dad, before him, we all have Olus in our name. So it's just a family thing. But yeah, pretty close. Olu.
Olu, not bad. All right. I'm getting better. There's some people's names I've totally butchered on the show, so I'm glad I didn't totally kill your name. But I appreciate you coming on. Thanks. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Like I always do on the show, before we get going, we're going to talk a lot about scuba. You're big into scuba and just some other things you've been doing. I was, you know, stalking your Instagram account, and I was like, wow, this guy is talented. He does all kinds of things. We're going to dive into all kinds of adventures and things for you and stories. But tell us a little bit about who you are, a little bit about your background so we know where you come from.
Let's see. This is always a cool one. Edward Olu, born and raised in Nigeria. I've lived in California, Southern California specifically, most of my life, most of my adult life, all of my adult life at least. Traveled around the world, scuba dived all 7 continents. Yeah, I tend to just embrace adventures and relish mindful moments. Life is if life were a book, you know, every little trip, experience, adventure is a little page and chapter in it. Let's check off all of them. All 75 years of experience, hopefully more. And that's really my core. Yeah, it's a very wide range of things I'm into, but that's pretty much the short version.
Well, and you mentioned adventure. This is, I like to call this an adventure podcast. What does that word adventure mean to you?
That's a good question. Haven't thought about that in a while. We tend to think of adventure as doing something wild, hiking, diving. Sometimes it really could just be, you know, trying something new. Something you may not know. Just trying something new. Trying something you find interesting. I think it's an adventure in its own way. An adventure could be going to the farmer's market. That's a cool little adventure. Adventure could be going to the skate park with the kids and trying to do, what were they doing the other day? Flip kicks. I had to sit that one out. My mature behind. Well, I don't want to break nothing today. But yeah, I tend to approach life, any goal, any activity that it, usually outdoors, but sometimes it could be, you know, really learning a new skill or doing something that you find some passion and some interest in doing. Of course, you have just typical things like things that could kill you. Scuba diving.
Scuba dive is one of those, right?
You know, flying, what's it called? Jet fighters, or maybe not jet fighters. They're prop planes, but fighter planes, you know, fighter aircrafts, or skydiving, things like that. They are adventures. I guess it's subjective at the end of the day.
It really
is. I think about it now. It's very subjective. I find my adventures mostly underwater, well, in the air, and in exotic places.
It's all over the place for you as well, then. It's not just scuba only. It's
exotic
places in the air.
Sometimes in the backyard. Sometimes it's just something down the street, something across town, something, you know, somewhere in America somewhere. Sometimes it's, hell, it's on a patio. Yeah, to answer your question, adventure is subjective, but I think it starts with passion. It starts with interest. You know, you find yourself gravitated towards it. It's cool when there's a little bit of a fear factor going on. That you can slice that in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you alluded to, you know, adventure. You said something with the kids. So you have children, family, wife. What's the story?
Absolutely. I've got a boy and a girl. Two young kids. They're growing so fast. Well, at this point, Aiden and I, they're 15 months apart. Almost Irish twins. Two kids that I know of. Just I'm a bachelor, divorced, but me and their mom, we have a cool relationship. We get along.
Good-ish.
They are adventurous kids. My son, he's very, okay. My son is more, his older one, and he's more of the, I'm going to try now and figure it out later. My daughter is a little more like, wait a minute, make it make sense for me before I try this out. We were in Hawaii, not last year, maybe the year. Was it last year? Or the year before, one of them. And just out snorkeling, free diving. And he had a personal best of like, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 feet. This is basically, he's just watching me. I'm not trying to have him do it. He's just kind of watching me, myself, my fiance at the time. And we're all just in the water, hanging around. It was maybe that profile. It was gradual. It was 20, 30 feet. He watched a couple of times. He's like, hang on, I'm going to try this. And poof, goes all the way to the bottom, comes back at a nice quick personal best. And yeah, he's looking forward to scuba diving. I come back, show them videos and talk about the trip. That's how the book actually came about. Cause yeah, it was mostly just, hey, this is what happened. And like, oh, how about that? At some point I thought they weren't interested anymore. They're like, oh, sure, whatever. You dive all the time. To them, it's just normal. That's what people do. Like, you dive, right? Okay, cool. And then I stopped telling them because I was just hurt. Like, you know what? You're not going to listen to my stories anymore? Because I used to try to make those stories up as like bedtime stories. Like, oh, this happened, and that happened, and that happened, and that happened. It put him to sleep. So I realized it was working. My daughter is pretty. She's when she's interested in something, she goes all in. You know, she started skating like out of nowhere. She's like, I want to learn how to skateboard. I'm like, interesting. Because she is usually more calm and more reserved. Not reserved like she's not going to try anything, but she wants to understand everything going on first. Well, she got her skateboard, and well, I got a skateboard too. My son got one, and we've been kind of doing it together. Most times I sit it out. But but it's been fun. That's a little adventure in its own way, right? You know, go out, learn tricks, learn how to balance. I used to skate a little bit when I was younger, but you know, it kind of comes back, so I still have something to tell them. But at skate park, they meet other kids that kind of teach them how to do things like that. I like to encourage them to try things, you know, try new things, try something that scares you, especially if you have fear for it or if you're not used to it. Because that way you learn to know what you like, what you don't like, what your limits are. You push boundaries, push limits. It just makes you, I feel like it makes you feel more well-rounded as a person, you know. There are very few things. I'll try most things at least once. There are very few things I know. Absolutely not. Maybe I just don't want to do that. But most things, yeah, I give it a shot. I might give it a shot and not like it, but I'll give it a shot regardless.
Speaking of giving it a shot, and you kind of, you said this, and I don't know if the listeners caught on or not, but you talked about the book. You said, so that's what kind of why I wrote the book. What's the book? Tell us what the book is.
Oh, yeah. I guess let me give the background. Around the World in 8 Dives. It's a children's illustration book. There's a coloring book too. So a few years ago, a couple years ago, during the pandemic somehow, I was the first year of the pandemic. Yeah. I was running this. Everybody was, you know, we're all at home and not really socializing. And at some point, I just wanted to talk to divers, I think, other divers. It was more like an IG Live thing where, you know, just reach out to people, talk to them. And there was really no main structure behind that. It was really just, well, we're in diving. So I just had to talk to someone else at dive and just relive the moment. Somewhere along the line, a conversation came up about diving Antarctica, which is to scuba divers more or less not Kilimanjaro, Mount Everest. It's the peak. It's not the hardest dive. It's just one of the less accessible dives. Just logistics to get there, get ready, get things done, get trained, things like that. For divers, scuba diving across 7 continents is like, you know, the hikers that you know, summit peaks across all 7 continents. Like seven club members. I forget what they call them. Anyways, so that came up, and for the last like few years, most of my travel has been very revolved around diving, especially in preparation leading up to Antarctica, which is one of the hardest. You only have a couple months out of a year, a few months out of a year to get there, or to, especially if you're going to be diving. So each trip, some trips the kids are come along, most trips they don't. When I come back, diving has been a huge part of my lifestyle. I take videos, I kind of force them, keep their eyes open to watch my videos and tell them all about it. They get excited. Sometimes it becomes bedtime stories. They kind of doze off and it worked great. After each trip or each expedition, I started just kind of taking notes about things like that, or, you know, the experience specifically from my perspective. Over time, you know, realized, wait a minute, this could be one of the reasons why I found the story to, oh, I felt like the story could be inspiring, is because when I started out on this journey, it's not impossible. It just seemed like, you sure about that? You sure about that? All 7 continents during a global pandemic? Yeah. Okay. Just, you know, sheer perseverance and just will, you know. Well, will, effort, energy, blood and sweat and everything. It worked out, and I thought it was a great story to share. Great way to share the adventure across all 7 continents. It's cool for just the adventure piece. It is cool for representation. Let's say divers in general, 8 billion people on the planet, maybe 3-5 million certified divers across the world. I will say there are probably only tens of thousands of people that have actually scuba dived on all 7. A much smaller percentage of them being black. This was coming out of the tail end of George Floyd and everything. So it was cool to see. For my kids, it's normal for them. They don't really have that, I guess, they don't have that context yet. It's still pretty just dives. Yeah, it's cool. When I'm 9 and 10, I'm gonna dive too. That's just normal, you know? And when I started diving, I never really cared about representation or thought about it that way. It's just, I really wanted to do this. And I did it. Over time, I realized, wait a minute. I can also kind of relate to it from, say, women's perspective. You know, I see a lot of female divers, but I can understand probably 20, 30 years ago may have been a little more interesting, a little more different. And divers typically have a God complex. And typically, anyone new to the crew, yeah, you get kind of hazed a little bit, like, yeah, prove yourself. It never really hit me. I don't really care. You know, I do it because I love it. But I realized, man, I don't know any other black divers. Huh. Actually, I Googled one time, like, black diver. found a couple friends, or a couple people, which were now really good friends, actually. And I thought this piece was something that was going to be able to just tell this story of someone that had this crazy idea to scuba dive all seven continents and the experiences across the board that hopefully are being read to kids and making them go to sleep real quick, because most parents don't want to just get them in bed as quick as possible, but also inspires them to find their own adventures in life, whether it's diving, whether it's whatever it is. Find something that seems almost impossible, do it, and be awesome at it. And that was really how that came about, from telling the kids, you know, things that happened, basically just journaling the experiences from each trip, to penning that into something that can be retold over and over again.
What came of it was that children's book. And tell me the name of it again.
Around the World in 8 Dives.
Around the World in 8 Dives.
It's an interesting one. There's 7 continents, right? But there's more of an ode to the 8 dive being in Nigeria. But, you know, once you get a chance, I do owe you a copy. You know what? Do you have kids yourself?
I do have kids. They're a little bit older now. So I'm okay. A little bit on the older side. I look okay. Young though, right? So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 21 years of experience.
Yeah, exactly. I've got 4 kids. I've only have one she's in 8th grade. That's the one that's left at home. The other ones are out of the house. 2 of them are married. I'm going to actually be a grandfather. So
there that's you happened. Go.
In fact, by the time this comes out, I will be a grandfather. So
there you go. I got one for your grandkid then.
Yeah, there we go. Perfect. Yeah, I'd love to. Love to have that.
Awesome.
Okay, so diving. Big part of who you are, scuba diving. Where did that come about? Being in Nigeria, was it like, hey, I'm going to die? Like, how did you hear about diving? What made you get into diving?
Growing up in Lagos, it's a beach city, very similar to LA. Well, similar in the lifestyle with the New York energy and the Florida humidity, then sprinkle a little bit of maybe Delhi and Rio. So it's a lot of chaos, a lot of high energy movement going on, a lot of extremes. As far as I can remember, most holidays, Easter, Christmas, whatever, we spend most of it on the beach. So I've always been curious about the ocean. What's underneath? What's going on? If I go, you know, this angle, what's on the other side of that's going to be Brazil, and this way it's going to be, yeah, maybe I can. So I get curious about things like that. And in my preteens and early teen years, I spent a lot of my time diving into encyclopedias. So I just got, you know, inspired by stories of these great adventures and, you know, going around and experiencing the world. Well, good, bad, and ugly. The spirit of adventure in itself is just something that's always piqued my curiosity. Watching movies like, let's say, James Bond, the underwater scenes are really cool, you know, things going on. I'd always been curious about it, but it was just something you never really think, like, yeah, you know, it'd be nice to scuba dive, but sure, life just happens and you forget all about it. I started diving in California, actually, many years later. So fast forward maybe, I don't know, 20 years now. Fun fact, when I started scuba diving, I could barely swim. I used to sneak away to like the swimming pools when I was younger, but efficiently swimming? Nah. Like I could just barely tread water. But I'll get back to that in a second. So when I started diving in California, something I wanted to do was going through kind of an interesting time. I think I started probably when I was getting divorced. Just something you've always wanted to do. Well, what are you going to lose? Just do it now. Why not? I went up, signed up. Hey, I don't know when I'm going to be free or when you guys are going to be free. Let me know when you got something. I'll come join a class. I thought I was just going to get the open water, the first level of scuba diving and the scuba diving cert. Maybe do it on vacation from time to time. I did that. That was an experience in itself. And then I learned, there's a whole new thing called, you know, Nitrox. You get Nitrox certified and advanced. I'm like, ooh, that sounds exciting. And I kept going until I became a dive master. But I know I don't want to really work in the industry as an instructor. At the time, I just convinced myself I don't think I have the temperament to really be an instructor. But I don't know. It's just maybe not my thing. I prefer to experience it and tell stories about it. And that's how I got in from, let me try this out because I've always wanted to. And why not now? I am scuba diving pretty much every other weekend, you know? for a couple years. I think it was like 2-3 years straight, just pretty much I was either I had the kids or I was scuba diving. That's one or the other. Or, you know, if here and there I'd do something else, but that's how I got into it. It's just one of those things that sucks you in. You start out with, yeah, I'm just going to get that fin or that pair of fins and get a computer, then get this mask. And next, you know, you get a whole garage full of gear, multiples of the same thing, you know, BCD. You got two regulators and six pairs of fins and four different kinds of masks. But over time, especially when you dive in different conditions, you tend to find that you need different gear for different kinds of places, different temperature, different wetsuits for different situations. It's been a blessing because it motivated me to, it's taken me around the world. Before that, I think I had traveled to maybe five continents, pre-social media. I don't even think I have videos or pictures from most of those trips. One of my lifelong goals has been to travel all seven continents. Just, I don't know, it's just been a lifelong thing. Just do it. And over time, you know, life gets in the way. You're like, whatever. Like, it's the same thing all over the place. Going into diving and getting through that moment where I found that motivation again to like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to push for all seven. Just made it align perfectly for me. And it's been a very wonderful journey. It's one of those things where, you know, at the end of the very last dive, it was like, yes, like mission accomplished, you know?
Tell me about that. So where did you finish off? What was the last continent that you completed? Have you ever felt the call of the open road, the desire to live life on your own terms, just like my guests on Journey with Jake? If so, you're not alone, and I have found the perfect haven for you. Check out landpirate.com, the virtual port for the free-spirited and home of the modern-day adventurer. Short sleeves, long sleeves, hoodies, they have what you're looking for. Use the code JOURNEYWITHJAKE to take an extra 15% off any purchase at checkout. I've got my Land Pirate gear, and I love it. Check them out today. That's landpirate.com.
So Antarctica was the last continent that was done. This was back in March. Yeah, almost a year ago.
March of 23.
March of 23. I had originally planned to go in March of 22. Gotten all the way down to Ushuaia in Argentina. Then along the way, they had canceled the... This is like the second wave of the... You know, the pandemic
right.
Flaring up again. Like I said, you only have really like January to March. April is pushing it, which is their summer conditions. And even then, it's hit or miss. Like you could go in and you got out of nowhere 70 miles an hour gusts. Like you just, if conditions are not in tip top shape, it's not worth it. You're 2-3 days away from any kind of help. The dive operations would not even allow it. So it's a small window. And I've seen really experienced divers go, you know, come down and something just doesn't align right. You know, reg is freezing up. This is not working right. That dry seal is leaking. Things happen. A couple years I've been diving in California. I can't think of a dive site in Southern California that I haven't really checked out. So it's been a lot of just Catalina, San Diego, Santa Barbara, Ventura, like the Channel Islands down here in Orange County, LA. Then the very first place outside of California that I went diving was Iceland, Silfra, clearest water in the world. When I was taking one of my specialties, I took a dry specialty, which is more for pretty like near freezing water. It's a specialty to learn. It makes you learn how to use a dry suit, which is different from a typical wetsuit because it insulates you more with a layer of air that's a little more conductive than just water flowing through like a wetsuit. So it pretty much for the most part seals in the air and just keeps you warm. And of course you need layers underneath the dry suit itself. So I had taken that, a taken dry suit specialty because I just figured someday I'll go to Iceland and I want to be ready when I get there. I don't want to go there and try to take the specialty. It's just too much work. Because it's a novelty dive. You just want to get in and do it. You don't want to go there and do the training. It was out of nowhere, actually. It was kind of like a last minute, hey, Iceland looks good. Yeah, I'm going. And the first thing, I literally get off the plane. There's like a shuttle that takes you downtown. And I had it lined up so the dive operation picks me up before I go to my like hotel, or I think I was in the Airbnb. Picks me up right off from getting off the plane, straight to dive. It was amazing. It was amazing. It was freezing cold, but it was amazing. Then later on, so that pretty much checks off Europe. I wasn't thinking about this at the time, but that checked off Europe. Yeah. Then after that, I was like, no more, you know, cold diving. So the next one was probably Cozumel. It was a week long or a couple weeks long with a whole crew from LA took over the resort. Amazing dives. One of my favorite places to dive, really. Then Cuba came along. Indonesia came along, checked off Asia. And I still wasn't thinking about this at the time. But after several conversations with other divers, it just kind of hit me. Wait. You've done like, you could push for the other four. And you, yeah. Well, why not? Why not? And honestly, that's how it's kind of started.
And so at that point, you had South America left, Africa. What else?
Yep, South America,
Australia.
Africa, Australia.
And Antarctica.
And the big one, Antarctica.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it was kind of, so the next couple years was pretty much spent planning, okay, where can I get to in the next 3 months, 6 months, next year, you know, places like Africa, for example. Okay. If you're looking to dive, say, in Nigeria, which was my original pick, well, I'm just biased because I'm from there. Mm-hmm. It's just logistics was next to impossible to get there during the pandemic. And Egypt was like, sure, come on in. And I said, okay, I'll go there. Egypt happened. Where was the next one? Oh, it was supposed to be Australia happened at some point. Australia is not, it's fairly straightforward. I mean, everyone that dives got inspired by the Great Barrier Reef at some point.
Right.
You know, Jacques Cousteau, all the footage from there and all the awareness that comes from, you know, environmental conservation and, you know, to keep the corals healthy and things like that. So it's kind of a Shangri-La for divers as well. That was huge. I just didn't realize they were off the coast of Cairns, which is like 3 hours by flight northwest of Sydney. So it was really cool. You think, yeah, I get to Australia, it's going to be Sydney, right? And you dive off of Sydney. No, the dive there sucks. It's too choppy. It's very similar to California. You want to go to Great Barrier Reef. It's, you know, you got to fly north and hop on a boat. It's a liveaboard. You go, you know, depending 3-4 days out or at least 500 miles or something offshore to get some really good dive. Yeah, that was a whole experience by itself. So that happened. Going down to the first attempt at Antarctica was a cool one because there are only two places you can really, for the most part, the main gateway is this. It's called the south. It's officially the southernmost city in the world, Ushuaia, just off the Patagonia mountains in Argentina. And you got to fly to Buenos Aires and hop on a bird to get to Ushuaia, then wait for the boat. Takes another 2-3 days to get into the Antarctic Sea or Southern Sea or close to the continental shelf. First time didn't happen, you know, the second wave of the pandemic then, but I was in Ushuaia anyway, so, well, scuba dive out there, check off
South
Argentina,
America. Yeah, South America.
Yeah. And came back the next year to do it again, and it kind of worked out. It's been a blessing. It's been really cool just thinking, as I'm talking about now, kind of going back.
For sure.
And the flashbacks are coming. So,
what were some of the biggest challenges you faced trying to accomplish this?
The biggest one was, you know, first, it's one thing to commit to a goal like this. It's another thing to really follow through with it. There's just life going on. There's every other thing you do in life. There's, you know, family life. And this kind of stuff takes a lot of preparation, a lot of preparation, especially with the wild card of diving in the Southern Ocean, which is not your regular scuba dive experience. I'll put it that way. You know, getting used to near freezing water is one thing. Getting used to the gear you need to stay warm, to stay alive in freezing cold water takes a lot of research, a lot of hours watching YouTube videos of other people that have done it. At the time, I think I knew one person that I knew in real life that had done it, and maybe a couple people just in general that, you know, I know through like Jonathan Bird, Sarah, who I met in Indonesia. I could count how many people I knew that had done it, but people do it, right? So that took a lot of effort, a lot of, all right, what gear do I need? All right, get the gear, get used to the gear, because the gear is useless if you don't have any real experience with it. And I'll break it into three parts for like ice diving, especially, or cold diving, like near freezing temperature cold diving. First, you want to use a dry suit, not a wetsuit. Too cold for using a dry wetsuit. And you're going to have a lot of layers, a lot of heavy layers underneath your dry suit, which is usually going to make you extra buoyant. So, you know, you're going to need a lot of weight to be able to go under. So first you get used to your dry suit. Then you get used to the setup, the configuration for cold water. Then you get used to the extra weight you're going to need to, you know, get in cold water and things like your regulator, depending on how you want to fix, how you have it set up. You have an extra hose for your dry suit now. Typically, I went with a long hose donate. So you just, there's so many things to get used to. So you just got to practice, buy gear, take it back, switch gears, switch it out. And all of this leads up to a 50-50 chance of decent weather or dive conditions when you get 10,000 miles and tens of thousands of dollars into Antarctica.
Right.
But overall, at the end of the day, just, you know, it worked out. So it's a lot of training, a lot of practice, it consumed me for a couple of years. That's all I talked about. If I met anyone within 5-10 minutes, I'm telling you about that trip or, you know, the mission and everything. It was, I think for me, it had to be top of mind all the time to really have that dedication to follow through. Cause I had like a whole board of, all right, here's what's going to happen in 3 months. Here's what's going to happen in 6 months, and so on and so forth, you know? And it takes just, you know, the sacrifice of, yeah, I'm going to spend this weekend scuba diving. Shout out to my favorite dive buddy, my partner. She was always willing to, like, you know, go out, and you always want to dive with a buddy. She was always willing to just be there, like, all right, what do you need? Sure. You're crazy, but what do you need? It just took years of just staying on top of it to really get there. Places like Australia, it's not as complicated, but it's just, you know, the logistics of get out to Sydney and Cairns and go back and forth, taking, you know, things like that. Egypt wasn't too bad. Really cool diving out there too. And it was a pandemic, actually. So it was during the pandemic. So a lot of the dive sites that are typically crowded, we pretty much had it to ourselves. The blue hole was really just us. The Thysagorm, the wreck of the Thysagorm was just our boat. It was actually pretty cool. That makes it feel a little spoiled, because if I go back there and there's like 10, 12 boats,
you'll be like, ah.
One wreck, I'm like, ah, yeah, this is not a good life. But the peak moment was Antarctica. Like, it's just so few people go visit, just period. Even fewer people go there and dive. On every boat of maybe a couple hundred to 300 people, there's usually only about 24 spots for divers. Maybe half of them are filled. Maybe 2, 3, 4 of those divers make all dives. And on this case, it was only like one diver that did every single dive. I got the dives I wanted in, but there's some divers that just maybe spent 5 minutes and that was it. Because things just go wrong. Things just go wrong. But when it comes together, it's magical. It's miserable, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I kind of noticed from some of your videos and things, some of it didn't look comfortable. I mean, it looks like it's cold. You're on these little, you know, boats. But what is it? What's the magic and what's the misery mixed together? What's that like?
A good friend, JD out of Alaska, shout out to Dive Alaska. He calls it type 2 fun. It is miserable, but it is very rewarding. And I actually did a week in Alaska. Just once I got I was used to dry suit, but I wanted to get that to be like just natural. I wanted to be one with my dry suit. So I got that done, and I got the practice I needed out of diving out of California. Then I wanted to get used to a similar configuration to diving really cold water, you know, Lake Tahoe. Then at one point I did Alaska, which is way more miserable. When you do places like Alaska, Antarctica just feels like they call it the Alaskan Caribbean. Like it's a blast, you know. A couple of the other divers on the trip, they actually went out to Alaska. It gets miserable, say a typical dive day in January about this time last year, actually. So in the dead of the winter, it's freezing cold anyways. You got easily 2-3 feet of snow every day. The closest dive site will be driving an hour and a half to Seward. An hour and a half in whatever condition you find, through a mountain with snow falling, get out to the, it's this, it used to be a pier, but it's basically just dilapidated. It's just broken down and there's a bunch of random things in the bay. Change into your dry suit, get your gear ready. You're freezing at this point. It's probably snowing too. You're sneezing, wheezing cold, and then you got to take all that with probably 40, 50 pounds of gear and waddle your way into the water to get diving, and it's freezing still. It's miserable. Why do we do this? I don't know. But when you get underwater, you get set up, you get sorted out. Maybe the fact that it's that inconvenient makes it more fulfilling. When you get underwater, you're going through this. The fact that you're here, it's not just like, you know, diving in warm water in Mexico or something. It's nobody does this normally. You got to be a certain kind of nut job to like, yeah, I want to go diving in 36 degree water. And coming out is probably the best part. Like, oh, cool dive. Like you can't feel your legs anymore. You can't feel your face, but it's like, yeah, that was a cool dive. You know, that's what makes it fun. So there's a lot of that going on. And then in Antarctica, it's a lot of, you know, you hop on a Zodiac, it takes you out to the dive site. It's cold as well. They find the right conditions. If the conditions are right, you hop in, you know, make sure you have all your gear. If you forget, one time I have one of my dry gloves, the O-ring on it broke. So, I mean, we're already on the Zodiac, away closer to the dive site. If I couldn't find another one, if like, you know, does anybody have anything else that I can use? Typically have a, you know, redundancy, pretty much two of every gear, every piece of gear you go with, but it's back on a boat. You're not going to go back to the boat and bring it back out. Someone had a 4 mil, which will be good for temperate water, for a 4 millimeter glove. So there's this video, you probably see me trying to hop back on the Zodiac.
Yes, I did see that video.
I couldn't feel my hands at that point. You know, dive leader's like, you know, grab on. I'm like, I think I am. I can't feel nothing. just haul me back in. You know, it's not pretty either. It's, you can't, there's no way you can look cool doing that. It's, you just have to muscle through it. You do that, you get back in a boat, you come back, you're sipping a cup of coffee or whiskey, whatever it is. You probably don't want to have too much whiskey after you dive, but maybe a cup of coffee has a certain coolness factor to it. That was amazing. That was freaking amazing. That was just awesome. And all the misery from before just goes out the window. You don't care about that anymore. You just had a good dive and that's it.
It's interesting how that happens to us, how the bad parts were, you know, the miserable parts we, you know, and sometimes if you think about it, if you put your mind that, oh, it's just going to be miserable, you may not have even done it, but you have that reward of you did it. You come out of the water. Yeah. And what was that like for you knowing, hey, I did it. I did all 7 continents, Antarctica, which had to probably be the toughest one to get to, the conditions, everything else. What did you feel like? What was going through your mind?
It was, and not just doing it. One of the dives I was really looking forward to was being able to dive, you know, next to an iceberg or with an iceberg at that space. And it's hit or miss. You never know. You know, they're typically free flowing or it's not safe enough to dive with them. And one of the dives just happened to be the right, be at the right place at the right time. And it worked out that way. You know, it's one of those things. I'm talking to this with a group of, you know, I made a bunch of people and someone just like randomly thrown out questions. Tell me something cool or something remarkable you've done in your life. And I didn't think about it. I just looked them dead in the eye and said, I've scuba dived all 7 continents. And that's how you feel. The euphoria of just, for me, it's a personal goal. But the fact is, so it's knowing what it took to prepare, to commit, to time, money, energy, everything it takes into doing all of that. It feels like something I beat my chest about it. It's something I'm proud of just for myself. But it's also something really cool to know that it's kind of an exclusive club, you know? I forget what the hikers call it, the Seven Continent Club or something. So yeah, it's kind of something like that. That euphoria lasts a while, you know, just thinking about all the things that happened along the way, thinking about just everything that happened, especially with that. I think my final dive in Antarctica was with the iceberg, and it was just the best way to just, you know, wrap it up. That just, like, there's a certain bliss that comes with it. I was talking to someone else that had done all seven. She's like, I don't know what else to do now. You know, how do you top this? When the excitement starts to wear off, I've started to look at diving a little differently since then. I'm just not going to dive for the sake of diving. Like, you got to impress me. This dive site has to impress me. There's got to be something really cool about it. Every dive is cool, obviously. And now I'm a little more picky about where I want to dive, what I want to do, what kind of dive I want to do. It feels good. I think it's just one of those accomplishments that, you know, with gratitude, you just feel on top of the world from doing something like that. You've got to love it. You've got to have a passion for it to even want to attempt it. Because it's too miserable to not like it. It's like living in LA. Like, you got to be, I don't know, you got to be here for a reason. You got to be in LA for a reason, or maybe in the industry to live here, because it's just miserable otherwise. So it feels like you're on top of the world. And then, yeah, it's one of those things that make you feel like you can tackle anything. You can tackle anything else. Bring it, you know, bring it on. What is it? You just got to find the right motivation for it.
Well, what does the future look like for you? I mean, you have dived all seven continents. What's the future hold? Is there some other type of adventure you want to do? Or are you going to keep doing some diving? What are your thoughts?
That's a good question. The first few months after, you know, doing all seven, I've gone across all seven, but, you know, there are tons of other dive sites around the world that I still want to check out. With diving specifically, after that, I got into free diving. I did a little bit more free diving, which is, you know, not just like snorkeling, actually taking certifications to have longer bottom time. It's almost opposite of what you're used to as a scuba diver. Instinctively, you want to keep breathing. You want to keep breathing, which is the exact opposite with free diving, because you're going down and not breathing. You're going on one breath, right? So that was exciting. So it's a little bit more half and half now. With diving, I don't know. You know what? I'll just do it all over again.
There you go. I love it. It's a great answer.
Pick different spots. Yeah, why not? Just do it all over again. I'm looking forward to, you know, diving with the kids. They're kind of getting old enough to take a few breaths on the water. And, you know, in a couple of years, they could be, you know, junior certified as well. So I'm looking forward to diving with them. Wherever the adventures take us. I'd done a lot of traveling that was very dive-centric over the years. And honestly, I got to tell you, man, after, you know, wrapping up all seven, I kind of got I was just burning myself out. I didn't realize how much I was wearing myself out just with everything that I needed some time to just decompress, not be so hyper-vigilant, not plan anything too far out. Just honestly, just
take it easy.
Take an actual vacation. Yeah. Take it easy. Not go on a mission.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it took me a while to adjust to that. And I think I'm kind of at the tail end of that. It's been a lot more just mindful moments, mindfulness, really, on picking the next adventure or the next adventures. There's going to be a lot that comes out of it, but now I'll definitely try doing that again. Maybe I just got to find the right reason to want to do it. But yeah, I'm also very much open to exploring other things as well. I'll always be a diver. I'll always be interested in diving, and especially encouraging the kids and being able to enjoy and share those kind of moments with them will be amazing. The ocean, the water, marine animals, things of that nature have always fascinated me. So I'm definitely going to be in the water more frequently, more often, but in whatever capacity that comes in, you know. I get a little more curious about more research-based work or something along those lines. And I get curious about other things too, especially flying. It's another thing that I think I tried this in grad school. Now I got a few hours of flight time but I never really computed. It was just way too expensive at the time. And I never got back into it, but I've always been curious about it. At some point, I could see myself finding my way into flight school and becoming a private pilot or something. And yeah, I try to take some time to have a normal vacation and just chill.
Yeah, you got to do that, right?
I try to find a balance now. The next big thing is still brewing. When it feels right, it'll come. Ocean, definitely, that's not going away. When I'm not diving, I used to spend a lot of time sailing as well. In the water, on the water, around it, close by. I spend an ungodly amount of time around the water.
You're a water guy.
Yeah, in many ways. Travel is inevitable. I never really considered myself like a traveler or travel person. It's just, well, you got to get from point A to B, you know? That's what you got to do. If I could just teleport from A to B and skip the line in the airport, which airports I find are one of the coolest places in the world, just the fact that so many different people from so many different walks of life are in that one space at the same time. It's one of the few places you see the most genuine hellos and goodbyes in the world, you know, just sitting down observing. Anyway, I digress. That has kind of been a motivation for me to spend some more time traveling for maybe less adventure and more cultural immersion.
Which could be adventure of itself.
Right.
So that's what I love about adventure. It can be, like you said earlier, it can be anything. It's subjective to whatever we kind of want it to be.
Yeah, it could be, you know, tasting pho all the way across Vietnam, or, you know, finding the right curry all across India.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of upcoming or, you know, trips planned for foreseeable future are based about something very specific like that. I'm way too restless to just chill in a resort. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not really that kind of a resort guy. So I always need to have a reason, you know, the main mission to do. But it doesn't always have to be it doesn't have to be crazy and wild. It could really just be a food tour or, you know, ABCXYZ.
I do want to ask you a couple questions before we call it good here. Taking away Antarctica, thinking of the other six continents that you had the opportunity to dive, if you only had one place that you could go back to and that's it, you got one spot that you can dive again, it's not Antarctica, where are you going?
That's a good question. That's a hard question too, because I like different places for different reasons.
Right.
I will say Cuba appeals a lot because... And it's not that hard to get into, really, even with the changing laws and everything. But apparently, a certain person was an avid scuba diver and decided to have, the entirety of the coastline as his personal dive site. So the coral in Cuba is pristine.
Wow.
It is pristine. It's not, you know, it's... Cozumel, for example, is a really cool place to dive. The Mesoamerican Barrier Reef goes all the way from like Belize into Cozumel, past the Yucatan, and a little bit of Cuba. Is just almost as huge as the Great Barrier Reef. But places like Cozumel, Playa del Carmen, they get a lot of traffic. You will see a lot of divers bang up those corals, you know. It just gets a lot of traffic. Places like Cuba don't. Went out there diving with a couple scientific divers, Cuba-based. Most of the dive sites, maybe the Bay of the Pigs, there was maybe one other group, but all the other dive sites was really just us. I wasn't sure what to expect, right? Then you go there, the reef's healthy, the features are amazing, the fish, they're lively. It was quite unique to have that, and to know you're diving in a place that there's only a handful of people that's ever gone underneath the water here, you know, locals, maybe Europeans in general, but in the parts of Cuba we're diving to was not the most popular part. You had the La Reina on the east side is more popular. They've got the freshwater sharks and saltwater crocodiles, so that's a little more popular. We did most stuff in the west coast and the south of Cuba. Very few people really go there to dive. It's not, no one really wakes up like, yeah, I want to go scuba dive in Cuba. It's just not a thing. But it worked out and it was great. So that, I mean, that's part of North America, I guess, or the Caribbean, however that, whichever political definition we want to. But that is something that stands out because you don't do that every day. It's really cool. But there's so many other places I want to check out. You know, Truk Lagoon in the South Pacific, Raja Ampat back in Indonesia. Next time I'm out there, I'll definitely try to do something like that. To answer your question, Cuba, definitely. Being the optimistic person I am, the best is always yet to come.
So where can people, if they want to follow along, see what you're up to, where can they find you? What's the good way to find you?
I'm mostly on Instagram at ed.olu, ed.olu. Yeah, it's mostly Instagram. There's, the YouTube thing. There are some videos up there. I got to get back to pumping some content out. I just kind of got into that creative wall with YouTube, with long form stories. But ed.olu pretty much everywhere. Instagram, TikTok for sure if you want to laugh sometimes. But yeah, always out there. Always feel free to stop by, say hi, and we'll get connected somehow.
Perfect. And my final question is, what do you say to someone who's thinking about it? Okay, hey, I love to dive. I want to do all seven continents. What are you telling them?
You sure about that? No, it's. I'll say absolutely, just do it. It's going to take, let's assume the person is just starting at ground zero. It will take serious commitment, time, effort, energy. Talk to as many people as you can. Get used to, it's going to be a lot of research. Get used to the dive sites, you know, dive conditions, what's needed, do's and don'ts. You know, you're going to have to figure out the logistics too. I'm always happy to share any information. I did a lot of that too. I had to, who do I know that has done this? You know, I talked to people, just try to pick their brain on like, how did you prepare for it? Who'd you go with? What, you know, options about gear selection, things like that. There's a lot of good resource on YouTube as well, where you can just find, you know, put in, you know, scuba diving in Australia, and you can see, oh, okay, this is that path, this is that part, this is that part. Because you want to make the most out of each, you know, each trip or each dive situation, and going there blindly leaves you open to very unfulfilling dives. So, you know, a little bit of research ahead of time really helps with that. It's going to take all you got to really push through. It's not okay. It's not a walk in the park. If it was, everybody just teleport and do it. But it is highly rewarding if it's something you're really passionate about doing. So absolutely, the first thing I'll say is just do it. Just get started. Don't overthink it. Start where you are and tweak as you go, you know?
Hey, this was fantastic. I love hearing your story. Love who you are and what you're doing. And you even talked about a little bit about your representation of what you're doing. I think it's fantastic. Ed, thank you so much for coming on Journey with Jake.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Jake. It's great talking to you.
I am so grateful I had the chance to hear from Ed Olu. As he mentioned, give him a follow on Instagram. It's at ed.olu. That's ed.olu. You can see firsthand some of his dives on all seven continents. And just a great follow, someone who's pretty inspiring to me. So I appreciate having him on the show. Thank you, Ed, so much for coming on Journey with Jake. Thanks to each one of you for listening to Journey with Jake each and every week. If you have not done so, I invite you to subscribe to the show. And if you could leave me a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast, that would mean a lot to me. Just remember, it's not always about the destination as it is about the journey. Take care, everyone. LandPirate.com, where the sea meets the land and the adventure never ends. Unleash your inner land pirate today. Get the gear that has you, the modern day adventurer, in mind. Visit LandPirate.com and use the code JourneyWithJake to get an additional 15% off at checkout.